This is Spectrum.
Alternative myth, homeopathy, secret society, hypnosis, the paranormal, alternative energy, UFO abduction, the weird, the wild, and the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. I'm Scott Jordan here with my co-host, Tom Theopanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Hey, Scott, how are you?
I'm good. Who do we have tonight?
Well, tonight we have two guests. One is a returning guest. I'm sure many people will remember him. His name is Ben Stewart, who is the creator, along with his brother Dan, of the films Esoteric Agenda and Chymatica. He now has a new film called Ungrip. The Ungrip film focuses on the journey through transitional and groundbreaking moments in a human's life. That person is Rob of the Paget family, who was a former successful IT professional who, after 20 years on the job, ended his career to move his family into the country to build an off-grid home called the Earthship, grow their own food, and establish the Paget family domain. Ben's film Ungrip was released on October 1st, 2011, and features Rob's home, work, and philosophy on life. Rob has created a 10-disc DVD set entitled Journey Towards Truth, where he shares key information about actual events and experiences while working towards conscious self-governance. So let's welcome you both. Hi, Ben. Hi, Rob.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Nice to have you on the show.
Very good.
Doing very well. Thank you.
Hi, it's Rob in the Paget family, but your friends can call you Robs.
Yep, Rob would be good for tonight.
Okay. What we're going to be talking about tonight is the new film by Ben Stewart called Ungrip. Some of our listeners will remember that Ben made his film with his brother Daniel Stewart. Made two films, Esoteric Agenda and Chymatica. I would highly recommend people watch those films. It's a good lead up to Ungrip because I think that there's a synchronicity involved in the three films. I was actually going to ask a question about that. What do you think is the connection between the three films, Esoteric Agenda, Chymatica, and Ungrip? Well, evolutionary in a way.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's art, and as I grow and I evolve, so does my art. So when a few years ago when I created Esoteric Agenda, that was really mirroring my art at the time, which I was going through massive amounts of purging, a lot of things in my life, material things, psychological things, mental, emotional things. And it's basically, in the film Esoteric Agenda, that was the purging of everything that I had been alluding to in all of my work. Same with the music, with Hyrasonic. All of that was really saying what I had wanted to say, and that was almost the purging in a shamanic setting. That would be the purging portion of it. So after the purge, what happens when I was working on Chymatica, which started immediately after Esoteric Agenda, that was very reflective of the fact that I was going inward in my meditations and understanding who I am. And I think the film reflected that. So, a lot of the art, the tones, the colors, the music reflected going inward, and it reflected going, after the purge, when all that noise is gone, you've purged all the noise and you've removed yourself from it, you can actually hear and you can actually see. It's like lifting a few thousand veils. And that entire film was basically the journey within being able to hear myself and being able to really see myself for what I am and find my purpose and find what it is that drives me. So for the first time in my life, I was able to really understand putting my energy into something where I am 100% conscious of how I am using my energy. And that was mirrored perfectly, I think, in the third film, Ungrip, because my good friend Rob that's here with us today, we had, in a sense, of the 2 years that it took to make the film Ungrip, we had gone through a lot of ups and downs, and it was a beautiful process. It came out the perfect time, and I feel that this entire process of making this film has actually very tremendously reached me and touched my life. And I realized I was having a conversation a few weeks ago with Rob saying that working on this film, to me, you're working through Final Cut Pro and you're just editing that slow and tedious process, but the entire time I'm listening to these beautiful words from Rob and in a sense almost taking them for granted because it was just an audio clip for me that I had to move into the right setting. But it was sinking into the subconscious and everything that Rob had gone through in his transition really did help mentor me through mine. And that's why I think this is a perfect way to reflect actually taking action. After you've purged all the noise and after you've gone within and found yourself and found the beauty and the confidence that you have within, then it's time to actually do something, follow your path. And that's where action comes in, and that's what I think this film is about, taking action, but taking action only after we truly see the world the way it is, see ourselves the way that we are, and have the intention that we believe fits our best ethic. And I think that has led us up to the release of this film, and that's why I think it's perfect timing.
That's great. So, Ben, tell us how you guys met and how this came about.
Well, the very first talk that I had ever given, which was after I made the film Esoteric Agenda, was a girl, Taz Janine, who studies anthroposophy in the work of Wilhelm Reich, was offering me to come up and give a lecture along with Rob. And so I didn't really, I knew a bit about the work that Rob was doing, but I hadn't met the man yet. And again, very symbolic. I had the idea in my mind, and then after I met Rob, the man, I found that there was such a deeper message than anything legal or contractual. And I shouldn't say selling point, but to me that was when I realized that the story of Rob really has to come out because it's inspiration. At the very end of the film, I added a little poem that basically states that, this is not legal advice. This is nothing more than fuel for inspiration, and that inspiration is to be used not to try to become something else, but to become more of what we already are. And I think that's what Rob had done, was he didn't necessarily become something else. He became more of what he already is.
Wow. That's great. Rob, can you tell me, was it difficult to make the decision to collaborate with Ben to be in the film?
Well, when Ben first approached me to do this, it was like 2 years ago, and I hummed and hawed about it because I worked so hard to build a private life, and I wanted to stay out of the public but I decided, okay, let's give it a shot. And then Ben came out that one winter and did a bunch of video. And then a few months after that, I started thinking and started getting kind of scared. And I thought, you know what, Ben, I don't want to do this anymore. And, I don't know, Ben was kind of disappointed, but, he respected my decision for that. And it wasn't until the spring of 2010 that I decided, I think this needs to get done and I'm ready for it. I did a bunch of growing myself and I know Ben shared with me too that break was actually a huge healing process for us and it helped give us the time to put things into a better perspective. And so we fired it up again and, he came out that summer and we recorded a bunch more footage. And, that the past winter and this spring, Ben was working really hard on it and we were talking back and forth and, lots of delays and lots of doubt and, dealing with fear and, what are people going to think and that kind of stuff. But I decided, I'm just going to push through it and let's just get her done. And Ben was very helpful in that too, because this is absolutely new to me. I'm in virgin territory as far as I'm concerned. Ben's the expert in this kind of stuff, so.
Yeah, no, I can see how you would think that way, because Ben's already done two films, and, you know, it's the uncertainty of it. Yeah, you don't, plus, again, with what you're doing and what you're teaching, on the one hand, were you doing lectures at that point? I mean, were you traveling around, or was that sort of was an outgrowth from communicating with Ben?
Well, I have been doing lectures, and my very first lecture was the lecture that Ben was in Toronto.
Wow.
I've been doing lectures since, but I'm only talking to like 20 people at a time. The scope of this film far exceeds my wildest dreams or expectations of getting, you know, my story out for people to hear.
Right, and it's not just your story. It's part of the stuff that's out there that could be part of many people's stories. I'm sure you meet and talk to people who are doing similar things. I know that you have an Earthship house.
Yeah, we built an Earthship, and in fact, the Earthship is, in my opinion, a key component to the work that I'm doing to remove my dependencies from corporate and government world. I personally think this path would have been much more difficult if we hadn't actually built an Earthship.
Right.
So, you know, removing our dependency from, you know, the power grid and gas companies and water companies and sewage and, you know, all that kind of stuff was, you know, a step that gave us tangible results that, you know, didn't take any confrontation or, you know, didn't upset too many people. And it helped us build a platform to do some of the more stressful things in our lives as we started unwinding ourselves from these dependencies.
Exactly. And Ben,
I was going to ask, Rob, so are you self-reliant right now completely, or you still have to deal with something?
Not completely. It's still a process. I still have internet and phone bills, and I still need fuel for my vehicles, and, you know, we still have to go to the grocery store every once in a while. But for the vast majority of, you know, the monthly bills and obligations that people have, we've managed to get those unwound. And it took about 5 years for us to get to this point. And I suspect there's probably going to be a few more years yet, because I'm at a point right now where I need, and I want to build community and find like-minded individuals to start building some synergies so that we can tackle the rest of the stuff.
See, that's a big deal. I was going to ask you about that. I know that you've got your Earthship, but I was wondering, okay, now what about, how could we expand this, or could this be expanded to a community concept? And I know you're in the land of Canada.
Well, yeah, I have my own family domain.
Yep. And you're not Canadian.
No, I'm not Canadian, but I'm located in the land we would normally call Canada.
Yep. Yep. In the land of Canada. And so is this something you're looking at doing, is spreading, giving this out so that more people can, and what, are you going to do that in the area that you're in, or say, look, there's some stuff you guys can do over there?
Well, you know what? I'm just kind of throwing it out there, and I'll see what grows. You know, kind of planting some seeds right now, and we'll see what happens. I've had, you know, some people try it out, but, you know, it doesn't work out because, you know, it's a lot of hard work, and, you know, people are still trying to find themselves and figure out what they want in their own lives. But over time, I'm starting to find or attract people into my life that do want to live this way, and even though they're not physically on the land where I'm living, you know, there's people around me that do have similar lifestyles and similar ideas. And we're just starting to work together, helping one another out.
That's great. Ben, when you came across this, is this something that you're going to do? Or did you just feel that the information was so interesting and so important that you had to get it out there and make a film about it? Or are you going to do any of this stuff?
Well, I've already begun in many respects, and what I believe to be the most monumental respects, because I've begun in the form of understanding who I truly am, going through the emotional steps and the psychological steps, and also just maturing into an adult, which I speak about in the film. And that is what I believe that makes up 85% of everything that Rob had done. And I think one thing, you know, the biggest thing that inspired me to do the film was how beautifully difficult I understood what Rob had gone through was, you know, and that was something that inspired me to take that leap myself in many ways with my art, with my job, you know, which now I work for myself 100%, and it's a scary step to take sometimes, and I never felt I was attached to those things at all. But what Rob's influence and inspiration led me to challenging whether I really was attached to those things, and all I had to do was really just take a look at it, and it turns out absolutely. You know, I'd never looked at it in those respects, but it's one of those things you don't realize what you have until it's gone. And that was, you know, Robin inspired me to take that beautiful step. As far as on the legal aspect of things and actually moving off grid, that's something that as of right now, it is, it's not part of my art in a sense. It's not part of what's being, what's coming through me in a sense of my art, because having these corporations, certain ones do actually not just benefit me, but they serve me in a way that not having these contracts would create much more of a problem, such as traveling, you know, the passports, the driver's licenses and things along those lines. They are serving me in a certain way because I use the driver's license to get into the clubs that I play at night when I'm on tour with the band. And if I had to explain or go through the process of sending letters to each of these clubs, I think that would be a very loud statement, and that's something that I've actually been thinking about. But up till now, I haven't had the energy to really take that type of a step because of all the preliminary steps emotionally and psychologically, what I was speaking about before. So it is a process. I have no idea. Maybe a year from now, I will absolutely want to take that step and move off grid and live much more self-sustainably as I do right now. But as of right now, I'm perfectly in love with the spot that I am in my life and the way it's serving me and the company and the best friends that I get to travel with. So to me, I am, in a sense, living the loveliest part of my life, the most incredibly rad and awesome part of my life.
Well, it's not like you're stuck in a corporate job working 9 to 5. And I see how it would be difficult since you're with your band and you guys are traveling all over. Every time you go across, you know, a border, that would just, you know, you'd have difficulties to deal with every time you check into a hotel, every time you, you know, sign up. I can see how that would be difficult.
Right. And once, you know, once the band gets off the ground quite a bit more, once I'm living a bit more within the vehicle of the band and the art, you know, kind of acting as a support for me financially and, you know, in many other ways. Once we get through that, then, you know, yeah, maybe in the future I would love to take the step to where, you know, I'll see if I can do this without all of those, you know, because it's kind of boring to stay the same, you know. I'll kind of want a challenge by then, I imagine. So, I don't know. I mean, I think that the direction that everything's going right now with the band, it's, you know, after doing this film, it's a really good, refreshing break in a sense or a transition for my art that allows me to come back to the films with very fresh and artistic ideas rather than just making Esoteric Agenda 5 times just with different information, you know?
Yeah, I totally get that. And is this, how did the Hangman project, you did a tour with around, you did some talks with Jason Gregory, a former guest we've had on the show that wrote a book called We're the Weirdo.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And is this sort of an outgrowth of the Hangman Project, or are those separate?
Well, see, the thing about the Hangman Project thus far is it's an enigma, which is the intent, really, of that project, because there was something that I had understood about the art of creating a project and having people be a part of the forums and be, in a sense, in this culture, but not have an identity really to what it is. There have been many faces of the Hangman Project, and I like that, and I also like the fact that it will keep changing and keep growing. However, it will be quite a bit more understandable after a year of actually developing it, which is what my plan is now, because it is an art project. And one thing I have been very clear about in, you know, previous interviews and things, that the Hangman Project really is more about the art than it is about the information of the films. And, you know, I have talismanic idols to show the films and everything, and, you know, radio interviews, I get into the details of it. But the Hangman Project really is more of something that, when it is more complete and when it comes to fruition, it will have been because of all of the people involved. So I'm not putting a face on it or an identity on it yet until it naturally develops one, and then it will be art that people can reflect themselves off of. And so it is from the films, but it's also a bit separate from the films. It's a little bit closer to my heart, in a sense, because my heart has always been in the art, which is why the band is really what the band and my brother, being a huge influence, are what really brought me into doing the films in the first place.
So, Rob, how do you support yourself and your family right now at this particular moment?
Well, I started up my economy, and so I raise chickens and we sell eggs, and we just got some goats, and you know, I've supported my family as well by doing some lectures and that sort of thing. But for the most part, the cash flow that I need is significantly less than what most people would experience. So, you know, technically I could easily support my family with our, you know, current corporate commitments with much less than $2,000 a month, kind of thing. So
yeah.
A lot of my work is actually, you know, working on, you know, raising our livestock and building the house and spending time with my kids and, you know, just being around.
I was going to say, so the operation you have right now with, you're running like basically like similar to a farm, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, like, you know, collecting wood for, you know, the winter time and raising livestock and, you know, harvesting and that sort of thing. That's where I spend a lot of my time right now, looking after my bees and you know, taking care of things around the house, sort of thing.
Maybe tell us what type of stuff, what type of animals you have and what kind of things you're growing.
Well, a few years ago, we started raising some chickens, and I decided to raise a heritage breed, Buff Orpington chickens. Mainly because I didn't like or I didn't want to have any genetically modified birds. I found out from some friends of mine who actually work on a commercial farm that, you know, the birds that they have now, you can literally raise them from, you know, a hatched chick to the dinner plate in 32 days. And that just didn't appeal to me. So I decided to go with some heritage chickens. And, you know, we found out that there are some issues with our current farming methods, mainly because there's a problem with our nutrient cycle, and that nutrient cycle is broken. Problem we have is, you know, the farmers harvest all of their crops, which are full of minerals and nutrients, and then we ship it off to the producer, the manufacturers, who then make products, goes to the cities, people consume them, flush them down the toilets, and they all get flushed out into the ocean. And we need those nutrients to come back to the land so that I can raise more food for people. And so we started working with my community to try to finish that nutrient cycle, because we were losing turkeys due to mineral deficiencies and that sort of thing. So that's some of the lessons we were learning from this, despite us raising heritage breed animals. And then last fall, we had a beehive donated to us. So I started raising bees, and I took a bee course. on how to do that. We're not doing it as a, you know, a traditional commercial bee farmer. Like, I don't smoke my bees or I don't feed them sugar, that kind of stuff. So we got our first harvest this summer, and it was absolutely the best tasting honey in the world. Our eggs are so much in demand that I just can't keep up. People just absolutely love the taste of our eggs. We have our chickens running around all over the place. We don't actually put them in pens. And they, you know, they go and they find their own food as well, too. And we just got goats this summer, and we're milking the goats, and, you know, we have the raw milk, and the milk tastes wonderful, too. And we decided to actually just start letting the goats run around free as well, too, because it was, we were finding that, you know, tying up the goats out in the pasture and moving them around was, you know, taking a lot of work. And since we let them free, they just loved it. And we actually found the milk tastes even better now than it did before. So, so you know, those are the kind of things that I want to do. And there's a movie out called Fresh and Food Inc. that influenced me greatly on how we're raising our animals, and we're pasture raising them, so, you know, we don't have them stuck in cages and barns and that sort of thing. And you know, if we can get the resources, I'd like to build huge paddocks, and we can rotationally graze pigs, and you know, followed by goats, followed by the turkeys, followed by the chickens. And you know, they'll, chickens, the birds will kind of clean up after the larger animals, kind of thing. And and that way I don't have to harvest anything. The animals kind of just do all the work for me, kind of thing. So
that's great. And this is sort of like a process you're going through. You've got the Earthship house, and you're expanding to, you know, organic foods and heritage chickens, and to be able to feed your family and yourself. There's a definite process to it.
Absolutely. It's been like 4 years since we started this, and I'm not even close to being done yet. You know, I'd love to be in a position where, you know, I don't have to worry about paying any bills or that sort of thing. But I do also want to be in a position where I can provide a lot of food for other people. And so this year we actually raised close to 600 chickens, and we hatched them all ourselves. We collected the eggs from our laying hens, and we have roosters, so they're fertilized, and I built homemade incubators. And because we're off-grid, I couldn't use any of the commercial incubators because they just take too much power. So I built my own, and we incubated our own eggs, and we hatched out 600 this year. And so we're providing chicken meat and laying hens for a few of our close friends. And I'd like to continue trying to do that with some of the other livestock that we have.
See, now that's great. That is awesome. I actually have a question for Ben. Ben, what do you think about the Occupy movement? Now, you told me a story. We talked earlier. You told me a story about how they were showing your film during the Occupy movement thing.
Yeah, that was up in Occupy LA, actually, apparently. And I haven't seen pictures. This was told to me by a friend of mine, Danette, who actually has another radio station with Zeitgeist, the Zeitgeist movement. So she contacted me and told me that there was a sit-in with I'm not sure how many thousand people in the streets, but on the side of a building, guerrilla style, they projected the film up onto a building, which is pretty rad. And what I'm really desperately hunting down some pictures for that. So if anyone listening has or comes by one of those pictures or knows about one, definitely send it. I'd love to put it up on Facebook, because I think that's a great testament to one beautiful independent way to get information out is, in a sense, you know, respecting the rules and respecting laws for what they are, and respecting that people have emotional attachments to them, but in the gray area in between, almost in that center area, there's a lot of challenging things that can be done that do raise awareness. And I think it's very artistic, and it could get radical at times, but I think one incredible way to get the word out is to just make a statement and let other people decide you know, where it goes from there. Because to me, that's just a film on the side of a wall. You can look at that anyway. You could look at just doing it to kill time, or you could, you know, do it because it's just a neat, interesting, artistic music film to watch. But it's also making a very loud statement and just letting the people who see it not have, you know, any preparation or anything. They just see this movie and this film, and it catches them off guard, and their first impression is exactly the way they perceive the world for them, exactly the way they perceive these issues to be. And so I haven't gotten in touch with anyone yet, but I've been contacted by a few people that would like to do the same in some of the other Occupy movements, such as New York. I know there's quite a few up in Canada. Now there's some down in Australia, and they're littered throughout the, you know, the United States. And I think that would be a beautiful, very loud statement of a very, very simple, you know, albeit a very profound and maybe not so simple on the inside, way to approach the world. And I think that's what this film does. So I think it would be amazing if we can actually gain the support of those individuals who would like to take the film, project it on the side of a wall, if there's ever any public gathering or anything like that.
I think it's a great idea. I think it's a great idea because the soul or the essence of the movement is, at least the way I pick up on it, people will read it differently because they're different people. But the essence of it is they're upset. They're occupying. It's happening in 67 different places right now that I'm aware of. And that's the last I heard of it. It could be more by now. It's changing day by day. There's Occupy movements popping up everywhere. But it's the general distrust of the government and distrust of the bankers and distrust of the corporate entity. And they're getting together and just sort of saying, you know, this has to stop. This has to stop. And the benefit, I think, of the Ungrip film is showing them, you know, there's other things that you guys can do. And even if it just plants that one seed, that's incredible.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, again, the one beautiful thing about the film is there are more questions raised by the film than the attempt made at answering a bunch of questions. And I think that's, you know, pretty much the essence of all evolution is not really answering the riddle of life. It's developing the riddle, because the answer to the riddle is simple. Everybody knows it and they feel it at heart at all times. However, the riddle is what we develop. And, you know, I think that's one thing that's encapsulated in this film is it's a timeless thing. What Rob had gone through in his life is merely an analogy for something that thousands of years ago, First Nations people, or a million years from today, should the species still be around, it's timeless. And these issues are not things that are stamped down to 2011. You know, what the same thing with the Occupy movement. You can say what you've heard on the internet of what these Occupy movements are and where they started. And I know there's a lot of problems. There's a lot of perspectives about what this movement actually means. But when you look at the essence of it, I don't really look at what the media is saying the message of this movement is. What I see is the same thing that you always see when people are in mass groups and they have allowed in one way, shape, or form, energetically or however it is. Large groups of people who feel that they are being enslaved ask that question. So they demand change. And one thing that I think is beautiful about this is projecting, you know, like I said, guerrilla style on the side of a building, you know, for these individuals who are demanding change, here is something that actually shows that it is not just easier, but it's closer to home. And really, the whole purpose of finding that freedom could be the answer to the riddle. So what I believe this film is actually saying to people is it's not about the path It's not about the specific paths you think you can take. Sometimes it's the road less traveled. And sometimes there is no correct path that your life should lead. If you follow your heart wherever it takes you, that's the path. And that's why I think that, you know, I've seen people have the greatest confidence in the world and have the most beautiful ethics in the world and create the most beautiful art that I've ever seen for the simple fact that what they're doing is they're following their hearts. Even if something that a guru may have said flies in the face of their art and that ethic, that is something that they must learn in their own life. And who is anybody else to say that they were not put on this earth to experience that thing? So I think, again, bringing it full circle back to Rob, what he had gone through in his life and the stories that are brought up in this film are timeless and they will never go away. And I think that's the beauty of it, is it's the most ancient riddle known to man that plagues, not in a negative sense, but plagues the hearts and minds of all people on this earth. It's that timeless. However, this is done in a very modern way, which is the same reason why Pink Floyd took the same old blues scales and put something new over it and revolutionized the sound. You know, it's the same thing as any artist who takes those old classic archetypal concepts and puts it into a new fashion so the people of today, the zeitgeist of today, the collective consciousness of today can understand it. Because those old archetypes, the way that they were said in the past, there are beautiful kernels of truth, but without saying it in a new modern way, sometimes the message is lost in translation. And so I think, what better way to bring about these old timeless truths that never go away when humanity is involved than to show somebody who has just done this in our life, our generation, right now. And it's a beautiful testimony to the fact that we have the choice to take our lives in any direction we choose to. And that's exactly what Rob did. I believe he followed his heart. It's not the exact path that I would choose in my life, but that's the beauty of being on this earth with 7 billion people, is we all have our own art. We can paint our lives any way we choose to. And that's, you know, that I think that's really the beauty of the story that that we placed in this film.
And Rob, this sort of connects in a way. It connects to the Occupy movement. It connects to governance. And what you said in the film is you're talking about the relationship of government to people is a parent and child relationship, and people being governed. And a lot of what's happening in the Occupy movement is, I think people are getting a sense of, okay, I'm all grown up now. You need to stop, you know, looking after me. And while looking after me, taking everything I own and, you know, screwing up the land in which I live. Do you see any connection, Rob?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is what's going on right now with the Occupy movement is necessary. I think it's healthy. I personally wouldn't go and protest myself, but what I see is people are, you know, ready to take responsibility for their life, and they're just sending a message. They're saying, you know what, okay, I'm done with this, and they'll find after a while that they can't change them. Nobody can change anybody else. The only individual you can change is yourself, and so, you know, they'll realize that, and it's part of the process, and then they'll go home and they'll say, okay, well, I guess it's time for me to, you know, take the bull by the horns, figuratively and literally, I guess, and start making some changes in their lives, and you know, follow their heart, just like Ben was saying, and, you know, create their own life, and at that point they'll then grow up and be that self-governing adult that I believe we're all meant to be. But keeping in mind, though, that I still believe that the state is still has a purpose. Like, I don't think we're here to overthrow it or destroy it or anything like that, because there will always be people who are unable or unwilling to govern themselves. And I believe the state is there to provide for that until they're at a point in their life where they then can take that responsibility. But, you know, the state has been resisting that, and they don't want us to grow up, and you know, there's going to be an opportunity here for them to take a look at what they're doing and say, okay, it's time to, you know, let them do what they need to do, or this could get ugly, and I pray it doesn't go that far.
Yeah.
Lately, you know, the especially the U.S. government now has been tightening the noose on many of the citizens, and you know, wanting to close, you know, their borders and so on. This sort of thing, I think, was coming, and at least for myself, I seen it coming even a couple of years ago, even before the, you know, some of the Arabic countries started to have those kind of revolts. And sure. I think this movement is probably going to turn into that direction very, very soon, because I think the people, just because we're in a democracy, we have the same problems that, you know, many of these Arabic countries have had as well with their leaderships.
But yeah, I think that those challenges are the same throughout the world. But I still think this is a healthy process. And what I see happening is when the people hit the streets, they're finding, or they're searching deep within themselves, and they're finding this power or this empowerment that they felt like they didn't have before. And my view is it's always been there, but they didn't let it out. And so when they get together as a group and they actually affect a little bit of change, they realize, oh, I can do this. And they start breaking down those interior, or in those, they start breaking down those belief structures that prevented them or restricted them from actually finding their true power within themselves. And so I see this as a tool for breaking down through those barriers.
And, Rob, if your head is on the side of a building, you know, in these movements where there's thousands and thousands of people around watching the Ungripped film, you're contributing to their understanding of answers that they're looking for, possibly. Maybe, you know, there's not everybody. This isn't for everybody, perhaps. What you're doing is an individual journey that you've been on. But it may spark people to go, you know what? I can take more control of my life. And that, in and of itself, within the Occupy movement, people are already looking for something. If they see the Ungripped film on the side of a building, that might be beneficial.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's where, you know, Ben did a spectacular job, is the artistic approach. And you know, I just love the way Ben sees things from a different point of view. And his commentary was absolutely beautiful throughout that whole film. And I see the film being a tool for us to influence the process. And, you know, because the reality is I can't change anybody, but I can influence people. And I believe Ben and I influence people, not by telling people what to do, but by walking the path and sharing the story. And that's probably the least threatening way of helping people there is just by saying, you know what, this is what I've done. This is what Ben has done. You know, these are some of the challenges we had, some of the struggles, but also some of the, you know, wonderful, beautiful experiences that we're having through this life as well too, and, you know, what we're learning about ourselves and the growth that we're getting through the process. And if people can hear it and they can relate to it, and if it touches them at any level, then Ben and I have then influenced people and we've made a difference.
Exactly.
This Occupy movement right now, I think, has probably a lot of the folks out there thinking that, you know, they're fed up with the corporations, the banks, because, you know, those, you know, high up folks have been, you know, getting away with murder practically. And they can pretty much do anything they want and they don't get nothing. And you go steal you know, a bubble gum, and you'll be in jail for the next 6 months, you know. So it's something that I think people are starting to realize that something has to be done to get these corporations and everybody to stand up and pay some attention, you know, with the problems that we have and how we're going to...
Mm-hmm. I also see this as a cyclical event. This happens over and over and over. It's reflections. These are new reflections, like a French Revolution. You had the hippie movement, which you know, got to a certain point and then the knees got cut out from under it and it died. This is just another reflection of that. If you see things cyclically, this is just a cyclical event. And the details change, but the events are the same.
Sure. And I believe it will continue to cycle if we don't recognize it for what it is. And I believe we can break the cycle. And I believe that cycle can be broken by us taking full responsibility for our lives rather than having so much dependency on other people and the state and these organizations. And, you know, the corporations and the banks, you know, they have a lot of power, but they got that power because we gave them our power. And we give them our power by the way we vote with our dollars and by putting all kinds of energy and, you know, working for them and that kind of stuff. And so if we can recognize that we're being capitalized on in that way and break that cycle, then you probably find that the more people start taking control of their lives and governing themselves, then the amount of influence and the amount of power that these large multinational banks and corporations have would significantly decrease.
I agree.
Well, I actually very much so agree with what you were saying, Scott, earlier. Is this is definitely a cyclical thing. There's never a point in history as far back as, you know, you'll find written history where there haven't been large groups of people demanding change from their government. And you know, it being cyclical is something where it shows that there's always a movement. There's always something. There's always some type of essence or lesson to be learned by all these things in different ages. Today, it's the one thing that I could definitely say about these Occupy movements is it's no different. It's just a different tool. You know, the movement of demanding something or the movement of asking for something, or the, you know, any type of movement where you are looking for serious change. I do it in a different way. You know, my outlet is through the films. My outlet is through these radio interviews, through my art, through the music. And in a sense, that's where the revolution and that's where the movement comes from within me. And I think, you know, regardless of, again, what these Occupy movements are about, I think the really interesting thing to focus on is the fact that when people are demanding change, whether they know it or not, what they're doing is they're demanding a lesson. They're demanding something that they can comprehend about what's going on, because people truly, desperately want to understand the way the world works on a subconscious level, whereas we don't necessarily consciously know that we're looking inwards every time we're looking outwards at our government, but we are. It is nothing more than almost as if a moving play, a real-life mirror that shows us an analogy of what's going on within our psyche at all times, because it wouldn't be a process if we were to be able to look inside and see the exact you know, ailments that we have or the egos that we have. One thing that is very interesting is all art reflects what we truly are on the inside. So these movements, you know, these Occupy movements are a form of art, and I really like to see that. However, what I believe the direction that it's taking is, Rob is absolutely correct, people are ready to take upon themselves, they are ready to take the responsibility back. And I think one thing is, nobody's really admitting to themselves in a sense that that's what they're demanding. And as of right now, you know, especially in third world countries and more impoverished countries, you'll see large groups of people gathering, demanding change. And one thing that's very telling is we here in the United States, you know, I know it's the same very many places, but, you know, just having experience here in the States, in a sense, with the, you know, the economic condition and the condition of the morale of the United States and the people within the United States is deteriorating. And it's actually a beautiful process, because before every new beginning, you know, the leaves from the tree have to disintegrate and turn back into the minerals that the tree will use as further food or things around it will use. And I think that this slow deterioration is a scary process, but it's also the same as any transition in human history, and any transition within a human being is when you're stepping into the unknown, it's scary. You know, up till now, humanity has been involved in nothing but learning how to survive the earth, survive the elements, survive nature in a way. And now that we have, in a sense, mastered that and overmastered that, I think the way that the journey is leading is inward. Man's journey up till now has been to survive the earth, and our journey from here is to journey inward. And I think that's, again, you know, these movements, it, you know, what I see, the overall, in a sense, you know, the overall culture that I see being bred through these groups is looking inward, understanding that there is a problem. So I think just showing art and using art, and this is when it points in time in history where you see revolutions of art, is where there is a large amount of energy being pushed through the instrument that is the human body and the human psyche. And you'll see revolutions in art because it's demanding something new, and it's showing that it can be anything. The future holds absolutely whatever we choose, you know, and it's not necessarily about the right or the wrong thing to do. It's what you do and what you don't do that will choose our future. So what I think we're moving into is also understanding that the right and the wrong thing to do is very, very not just flexible but interchangeable, because it's only based upon our perception. And our perception of the world right now is what's keeping us hanging on to a dinosaur, a fossil, a system that has already, you know, it completely served its purpose, and now we're moving on. And people just don't call it by that name, so it's scary. What's going on within humanity, all these changes, all this talk of end times and revelation, all of that is very indicative of people understanding within, on a subconscious level, that things are inevitably changing. And that's why when you were asking me earlier about going and traveling with the Hangman Project for, you know, out in Australia and things like that, I actually did a whole talk that was entitled The Inevitable Age of Art, which is what we are moving into. And saying inevitable, obviously, is a very strong word, and it's something that I was uncomfortable with, you know, using at first. But again, that's also, it's very jolting to the consciousness to hear something like that. And really all it was about was showing that we are stepping into an age where art is going to be the salvation, and understanding the significance and also the depth of what art is, because it's not the painting or the song or the sculpture that is art. That's the reflection of art. That's the result of art. But everything leading up to that is the transition within the human psyche and the human heart. And I think that is really beautiful, because what we're seeing is literally an externalization of the transitions we're experiencing as humanity on the inside. And whether we recognize it by that name or not, that is something that we are all experiencing together. And I said this to a friend last night who was actually visiting the show, you know, a fan of the films and very much so into the message of Ungrip. When I was speaking with him, is the overall arching point, the only definite thing that I can say is what the, you know, the experience that I've had on, you know, on this earth, and what I've seen is we may go inevitably towards our destruction, or we may go inevitably towards our own salvation. But either way, there's only one thing that'll never change, and that's the fact that we'll always do it together as a species. So if we're going to destroy ourselves, we're all going in that direction. If we're going to save ourselves, we're all going in that direction. And that's what's beautiful about it, because we are slowly, internally learning the lesson that it's not just about what we do with our own lives. It's also about the people around us and our relationships, because it's our relationships and our community that is going to be the backbone and the canvas that we paint our lives, our art, onto. And it's one of those things where it seems like we can have this cold, calculating earth, you know, or this plan and agenda on earth where we can make sure that all the resources are here, and we can make sure that all the material things are here, because that reflects happiness, right? You know, those are the symbols of our happiness, is all the stuff, all the things we have in our lives. But without the essence that moves through it, you know, that feminine quality that moves through all of these material things, is that overarching and, you know, inevitable essence that is what we are, and that's constant change. We are always changing as a species, and we are always going in a direction that the entire species is moving. And I think that Rob shows that in his work. He even said towards the end of the film, what he's learned, the biggest lesson is that it is all about the relationships that we have, the relationship with our environment, our food, our friends, and the people that we are going to occupy tomorrow with. No pun intended.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. And a big part of that, I think now, at least in this time frame, is the internet and connectivity and it's almost like a neural net, the way your neural networks in your brain, the synaptic impulses that are going off and the different aspects of the brain communicating, as well as the spirit and, you know, your mental outlook as well. This seems to be a planetary neural net that's happening. Again, that's why it's cyclical, because it's just a new groove, which is an update from the old groove. It's been running in the old groove. It moves to a new groove, has essences of the old groove it was running in. There's a neural sort of a thing happening right now, and the synchronicity of it, at least that I see, and I've mentioned this before, the synchronicity of the Occupy movement and Ungrip coming out, and there's another new film I'll mention right now called Thrive. And if you guys haven't seen that, it'll be coming out in November 11th. I recommend you see that as well. There's a connection. There is definitely a connection to the time frame and the synchronicity of events of the Occupy movement and Ungrip coming out and, you know, Thrive coming out. And this, people are going, okay, now I know there's something wrong. If they know there's something wrong internally. There's something internal that they're picking up on the signals. Then they can go on the internet, they can look at all this information and go, hey, hold on. You mean that it's not a two-party system, that it's or a three-party system? It's actually just one sort of collaborative governing body, and they're just switching the pieces around on the chessboard? Wow. And they wake up to that fact. And then it's an incremental thing. And so a lot of the people, if you've seen the interviews on the internet of people doing the Occupy, these are smart people. They know what the hell's going on. Now, they may not know to go out and get an Earthship and stuff like that, but that's where your film comes out. But people are more and more aware that the stuff around them isn't exactly the way it's portrayed on Fox News or some of the mainstream media. And they're demonstrating on it.
Yeah, I would agree. And the stage that they're at right now, in my opinion, is they're starting to express the emotional reaction that they're starting to have to some of these revelations that they're running into. And that's why they're on the streets right now, is because they're expressing some frustration or anger. And that's a healthy part of the process, and it's a necessary part of the process. Anger and frustration, you know, what I learned from my recovery from depression is that there is no such thing as a bad emotion. They're all very, very necessary, but our reaction to these emotions can turn it into a good or a bad experience. And, that's where people turn to drinking or drugs or, you know, that kind of stuff, is because they can't handle some of these emotions. And so when they're running into these intellectual shows, showing them, you know, how things really work, and, you know, that's going to spawn an emotional reaction, they're expressing that now. And then when they move past that, then they can say, okay, I'm good with this now. What do I do about it? And then they can really start to empower themselves and actually move forward with some of the changes that they want to make in their life. Otherwise, if they get stuck and they can't process those emotions properly, then they'll just kind of sit there and spin their wheels until they can get past that.
Yeah, so the film Ungrip is providing information and answers and one man's journey, as it were. Ben, do you agree with that?
Well, absolutely. The information in there, and also the way that it's presented, the flow of all of it, it's representative of one man's journey, absolutely. And it's also, again, like I was saying earlier, representative of, you know, a timeless thing. It's actually in the tarot deck. It's the Fool, the zero card, the Fool, moving through the 21 other major arcanum. and traveling with him the bag, with either a bundle of sticks or the bag of burden that he carries on his back through all these 21 experiences. And again, in that, within 21 experiences, you have, when you break it down, three groupings of seven, which are, very, very important numbers numerologically and also, mathematically with how our body works and how our psychology works and how cycles run and, the rhythms of the earth. So I think that what we are playing out right now and, the transition that Rob had gone through is actually a beautiful mirror, and it's almost a foreshadow of a direction that I've noticed from, all the responses of the film and all of the emails that I've been getting, something that people have been considering doing lately and considering doing for, quite some time. I've gotten so many emails that say that that's so funny that you would release a film about something like this, because I have been thinking of doing something very, very similar, and this basically didn't give me, some people who have been doing research on these things their entire life, it's not really telling them anything new informationally, but it's showing that a human being had done it. And I think that's also one of the most beautiful parts of the film, is the fact that we don't just focus on information. To me, that's, there could be a message within any type of art, but, the way it's presented is actually what I think is most important. And I think Rob really had gone through the process of showing, in the stories in the film, he showed that a human being was going through this. It's not like you get pulled over by a cop and you can be John Wayne and say, exactly what you would like to hear in a movie, and the cop will just like bat his eyes and be like, "I'm sorry, sir," and walk away. It's not like that. Your heart starts racing. We would all love to think that when we go up in front of a judge, we would say everything that we thought we would and everything we'd written down that we'd like to, see in the next Hollywood movie. Those, incredible one-liners that we come up with in our head, all of that goes out the window when you're actually in that circumstance, because it's real life. It's something that we maybe hadn't bargained for on an emotional and psychological level. And I think that Rob exemplifies that beautifully, because that's just as important as any of the information is, again, ideally, it sounds, great on paper to, like, "Oh, this sounds great. I'll just hop into it. I'll do it tomorrow, on my lunch break." It's not like that. You don't change in an instant like that when, it's usually something that's been growing within you. And that's the whole purpose of it. Life's a journey, not a destination. It's about the process. It's about the growing. It's about the slow and painful letting go of all of these attachments that we have on the material world and on the things that we find so precious that are finite and fleeting and always just there to show us a message about who we are. And it's a scary thing, obviously, but I think Rob shows perfectly that, a perfect sister or a partner to our fear, instead of an enemy to our fear, a perfect partner to it would be to say, with all of this fear, I am going to use this as my, to show myself that I am courageous enough to do exactly what I know I was put on this earth to do. And I think that's what Rob and this movie has really brought to the hearts and minds of the people who've seen it so far, is the fact that that is the most valuable part of this journey, is not moving, off grid. It's, those are certain reflections of the joy that we're experiencing, by releasing ourselves. And it's very great to have those things. However, I think most people that have gone through this process learn very, very quickly that the number one thing that is changing is the consciousness. And that takes some development and awareness, obviously. So you're conscious and aware of all of the risks of taking this giant leap of faith, such as what Rob has done. And I think that showing that this isn't a walk in the park. It's not like you could just have a template in front of you that works in every single court. "Oh, just say this at this time, and then immediately after that, the judge will have nothing other to say than this, and you can retort it with that." And it's not that easy. It's a living, organic thing. It's meant to challenge us. It's meant to get under our skin. It's meant to tap into those very, very sensitive portions that we've built walls around within. And I think that's the most beautiful part of the journey, is Rob showing that his value of this entire journey is not simply moving off grid. It is the place that he moved within his heart. And that's the message that I think people are actually understanding, to me, I'm very pleased to see that people are actually understanding that message, even very, very young individuals. I get a lot of emails from people 12 and up saying that.
Really?
It's yes, absolutely. Well, 12, I shouldn't, you know, put a huge, you know, that it being where the category is. I've had one 12-year-old email me.
That's cool, though.
Right.
And he's getting it.
Absolutely, and I think that's beautiful. The majority, I would say, are in their early 20s to mid-40s, you know, and that's very important because, you know, when you understand the generation that you're speaking to, you understand the art of it all, because we all attach ourselves to art in you know, in a modern way. And I think that, you know, it's very telling that there's a youthful generation that is very much so tapping into the underlying message, the real essence of what this story is. When you would imagine that, you know, when I was younger, if I would have seen a film like this, you know, I don't know if I would have been ready to understand the message of it. I would have heard I would have seen how cool it is, you know, to oppose authority and, you know, be able to get up there and have that confidence to say whatever I choose to say. But I think Rob brings a very important aspect to it, that there's also a very big responsibility that comes with all that power that we bring forth from within. And that's understanding that not everybody thinks and comprehends and perceives the world the same way that we do, and they have the right to perceive the world any way they choose to. So having the respect of knowing that, you know, some people who want to live within the system, it's not something that we should be demanding that they change their lifestyle. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the more important messages that I think does ring very true in the film.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
But it gives them an option, though, right? I mean, what Rob has done is giving an option to individuals that may want to follow that type of lifestyle.
Absolutely, and I, sure. You know, basically answering that real quickly, and I'll allow Rob to touch base on that, but one thing I'd really like to say about that is it does open up an option for people, and it opens it up in a very clear and concise way. And the way that Rob puts his story, I have no idea how we fit such an elaborate, beautiful message in a one-hour film, but it speaks volumes, and I think that's, you know, that's the beautiful part of it, is it does show that there isn't just one other option out there because of what Rob's doing. I think Rob has inspired people to look at the infinite amount of options we have to go from here.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I, you know, Ben says it so nicely. I just love listening to him talk, because he's so articulate, and I think that's a talent that he has for these films, and you know, I respect him greatly for that.
I could ask you, what sort of feedback have you gotten? I mean, this was a personal journey for you to go through all of this. You didn't just learn about this when you were 15 and go, okay, this is what I'm going to do, and this is how I'm going to plan it. This is something you came upon it synchronistically through your wife.
Yep.
You know, she said, "What do you ever heard of a natural person?" And you went, "No." And went and investigated it, and it grew from there. So it's a process, a personal process that you had to go through. And now that process is continuing, not over, you're getting a lot of feedback from people. And what is that feedback?
To be honest, the feedback has been overwhelming. I knew, and this was some of the fear that I had when I was, you know, particularly when we, you know, were getting close to the release date, I was thinking like, oh man, like, I don't know what to expect. And I'm sure Ben was kind of chuckling, you know, behind him going, yeah, watch this, Rob.
Ben's going, I've been there, done that.
Yeah. I was overwhelmed because the feedback has been very emotional. I've had people, you know, share with me privately and publicly through Facebook and through email how much they appreciate it, the gratitude, you know, the raw emotion, emotional outpouring of feelings that I've been getting from people has been, I'm still at a loss for words because it's I'm still processing it all. And
it's very emotional, isn't it?
Very emotional and overwhelming. And there's been moments where, you know, I'm just bawling because I, you know, having that kind of influence or that kind of impact on somebody else's life is, there's no words to explain it. I don't know how to explain what it feels like to be in a position like that and hearing from people, and people are excited and, you know, they want to learn and, you know, they want more information, and, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, raw gratitude is a powerful thing. We have a lot of fake gratitude. Like when someone opens the door for you, you say, oh, thanks.
Yep.
And, you know, you meet people and you go, oh, okay, it was great meeting you. Hey, thanks. That's sort of social gratitude. But yep. Raw gratitude, when you've affected somebody's life in some way positively, raw gratitude is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's moved me tremendously, and it's changed me too. Like, I'm not the same guy I was a week and a half ago before this film came out. And, you know, I'm still trying to come to terms with what it means to me and how I'm going to deal with it. I've had friends of mine, you know, give me some suggestions and some advice to just let it flow. Not try to block it or, you know, try to stuff it or anything like that, but just let the energy and let that gratitude keep flowing, and then that way it's not so overwhelming.
You might be on the forefront right now, as Scott was saying, and the timing being perfect with this kind of stuff that's going on out there, and you can become a role model for a lot of these folks out there as well.
Yeah, you know, when Ben came to me about this film, I really didn't have any idea of what it would mean or what my role would be in any of this. And to be honest, I'm still trying to figure out what my role is. You know, I still view myself as a normal guy, you know, with normal problems and normal challenges in life, and just trying to do my best. And, you know, what I learned from my depression, though, is that, you know, I can build strong relationships by taking some risks and opening my heart and sharing my story. And, you know, for the last 10 years, that served me very, very well. And so when Ben approached me, I kind of thought, well, let's take it to the next level and see what happens. And, you know, I'm still not exactly sure what my role is in all this, yeah.
Did you know that the next level was going to be a mountain?
hey, never mind. You know, in about a year from now, when you know everybody's expecting, you know, some major change. Maybe the major change will not be, you know, some etheric thing, but rather, you know, people realizing that they can take control of their life.
Yeah, like you did. And yeah, for me, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to say, okay, well, you know, the film is out. You know, people are looking for me for, you know, some assistance or guidance. But in the end, I still have to live my life, and I'm where I'm at today because I chose a certain path, and I still have a desire to walk that path. I will do what I can to help people out, but in the end, I still want to, you know, walk the path that I started. And so I started a website to, you know, post a lot of my lectures and a lot of the information that I have so that I can, you know, share with people where I went and what I learned. But in the end, it's still their responsibility to learn that for themselves.
What's the website, Addy?
The website is consciousselfgovernance.ca.
There you go. And Ben, just while we're talking about website Addies, what's yours?
Well, there's talismanicidols.org. And that's talismanicidols.org. And that is for the art production company that my brother and I do, my brother Daniel. And then there's also the Hangman Project, which is under construction right now, but it's hangedmanproject.com. And also, I just tell people if they would like to speak with me, Facebook is actually the easiest way. And you know, I take people onto my personal page under Ben Stewart, but there's also Talismanic Idols, and there's a page for all the films in there as well. And that's a very good way to get a hold of, you know, I hate to speak for you, Rob, but, you know, a very good way to get a hold of Rob, I would imagine, as well. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. I have, you can find my wall on Facebook, and I also have a page called Conscious Self-Governance as well. You can find me there, too. Lots of activity going on there right now.
Do you guys have a list of all your speaking engagements and stuff like that?
As of right now, we actually don't have any confirmed dates for that. I'm on tour with the band I'm in, Hyrasonic, and we're in Chicago right now. Is actually where I'm doing the interview from. So we're going to be touring quite a bit. For the next few months, it's going to be on and off. But I am definitely leaving time to make sure that Rob and I get the, you know, get the word out the proper way, which I think, you know, the best way to do it, you know, as of right now is just to travel around, do screenings and talk to people face to face. You know, I'm learning that being in a band as well as, you know, there's certain timeless things that'll never go away, and meeting people face to face, to me is always, always, always the best way to form any type of, you know, global community, you know, what have you. It's great over the internet. It's great because, you know, we don't have to travel so far. You know, it's instant access to anybody across the world, but getting out there and actually meeting people face to face, I think is an integral part of Rob and my evolution from this film, you know, because this, as Rob mentioned, this film is a very big part of our lives. You know, it's a reflection really of what we have gone through and what we are going through, and it's a platform for new growth. And I think that you know, one of the things that we're going to do is now really come to terms with the people that we're reaching, you know, and the people who are going to make any type of global change, or, you know, maybe just national change, or even local change happen, and that's the people. So, you know, I think it's all of our, you know, Rob and my and my brother, it's all of our responsibility on top of making this film to get out and to actually meet people face to face and show that we are human beings, not, you know, not just icons on a computer screen.
Yeah, I totally agree. I got a question for Rob. Actually, let's get some informational stuff out there. Rob, I got a couple questions for you. One is, I mentioned earlier, a natural person. Could you tell our listeners what a natural person is?
Well, a natural person is essentially a term that the state has for what I would call a man. And, you know, the opposite of that is an artificial person, which is a corporation. I personally don't use those terms to describe me, because I'm not part of their system anymore. I prefer to say, you know, I am man, I am that I am, rather than putting some label on me. And so I don't actually use those terms anymore. Cool. Because they're actually specifically for the state when they're trying to describe all the human beings that they have control over.
Okay, I'm going to ask you another question. We were mentioning earlier about a case in Ontario called the Regina versus Schmidt raw milk case, and I found that really interesting. Could you tell our listeners about that?
Sure. Michael Schmidt is a milk farmer in Ontario, and he sells raw milk, and the state took him to court and charged him with, I think it was about 18 violations of the Milk Act and other pieces of legislation. And there was a ruling back in January of 2010 where he was acquitted of all the charges. And the ruling was one of the most beautiful, articulate, well-thought-out, well-researched rulings I've ever seen a judge write. And in fact, a lot of the arguments or statements that the judge made in that case reflect a lot of the things that I've been trying to teach people over the years. And I actually held a class a couple of years, a couple months after it came out. And it's actually online on YouTube. If you search on YouTube, or I can provide the link. I can't remember if it's you can find it there. But
I will place it on your under your upcoming guests. And the next day after the interview goes live, I will put it on the archives page. So no worries about that. Any links will be on the website www.spectrumradionetwork.com. All the Ben's links and Rob's links as well. So we're going to get some traffic going that way.
Perfect.
I also go ahead.
Sorry. Essentially, just to finish the question, the judge essentially argued that people who are in the public, they are deemed vulnerable and that they need protecting. And that's the primary and only function for statutes and regulations. And so if an individual chooses to take full responsibility and explicitly remove themselves from the public and say, I will take care of myself, then statutes and regulations do not apply. And he supported that with Supreme Court rulings as well, too. And some of those show up in that film that you're going to provide the link for. And I also talk at length about how that really relates to the work that I do in trying to govern yourself and the duty of the individual to put the state on notice proactively rather than just, you know, making a declaration and, you know, pretending that the state doesn't have a say. They make assumptions, and you have to rebut those presumptions and assumptions that they make.
Totally. Ben, I know you're running a little late. You've got to go. Maybe if you could just give a last word. I'm very grateful that you made this film on GRIP, and I think it is a great addition to the Esoteric Agenda and Chymatica and UnGRIP. It seems to be an evolutionary series there. And also, I would like to get if you have a website for your band. I know you guys are traveling right now. Maybe you could get that out as well.
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, thank you for what you said. I'm extremely grateful for even having the platform to be able to release these films, and for so many people to welcome the message so warmly. You know, I also absolutely love those that don't receive it too warmly because they, they're showing. They're showing all different sides of what the issue is that we're dealing with. So you know, I just want to, again, say, you know, thank you. You know, it's been such a growing process for me to make the films. And UnGRIP has really just, you know, moving forward in my own life. So I'm glad to have a platform. Glad to be able to be able to do my art the way that I do. And that, you know, inevitably brings me to another way that I bring out my art is through the music. And the band actually did the soundtrack. You know, they were gracious enough to in a sense, donate their time and their creativity to the film because they, just as I truly believe deep in my heart that, you know, what's happening right now is a beautiful process, they are, too, you know, my support. You know, they have helped me move along my life to where we are. So they decided to say thank you and also to support all of this, donated the soundtrack, which came out beautifully. And so the website, and we are going to be releasing that soundtrack in the near future. The website for the band is actually www.hierosonic.org. And Hierosonic is spelled H-I-E-R-O. SONIC.org. So yeah, anybody can get, if you're interested in the band, absolutely go check out, the tunes on, they're on Facebook and everything like that. And you know, when it comes to the film, DMs or anything, absolutely any question anybody has, definitely please get in touch with me on Facebook. Add me, start up a conversation, because I have surprisingly had the time to respond to a great amount of the emails that, you know, obviously there's been a flood of them, but I have had the time being on tour and having so much downtime on certain off days and things like that. I do get to respond to as many emails as possible. So I would say anyone who wants to get in touch with me, definitely find me on Facebook, either Talismanic Idols or just Ben Stewart.
Oh, thanks, Ben. And we'll be looking forward to the Ungrip World Tour. You know, I know your life is very busy, but eventually I think that's what it's going to come down to, is the Ungrip World Tour, where you're traveling around.
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. I mean, you're meeting people, interacting with them, hearing their stories, and by hearing their stories, it helps you understand yourself even more, I would think.
Absolutely.
And thanks for your time, Ben. We'll continue talking to Rob.
Yes, I mean, thank you for having me on. It's been a pleasure, as always, and I'd love to come back on anytime.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, Ben.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ben.
Rob, there was a part of the film that I found very interesting, and that's when you had built your Earthship, I assume, you were doing some building. You were creating the Earthship, which is your home, which is you can maybe explain a little bit about the creation of that. And secondly, you'd gotten a piece of paper where the county had said they noticed you were building something and wanted you to fill this piece of paper out. And then it carried on from there, and there was a tax man involved. So maybe you could tell that story, because I thought it was great.
Well, we started building the Earthship, and we're a couple months into it, busy pounding tires. People that aren't familiar with Earthships, they're actually built out of automobile tires, and it's a rammed earth building. And we literally use sledgehammers to pound the dirt into the tires. But we didn't get a building permit for what we're doing. And this is the main reason is because we decided to take full responsibility for the project. If one gets a building permit, then the liability actually falls onto the county. And so through that process, they want to make sure that due diligence is done, so you have to get the building permits and engineer drawings and all that kind of stuff. Well, I didn't want them to have access to our land, and I was wanting to take full responsibility for our work, so I decided to not get a building permit. And the county noticed that we were doing something, so they sent us a letter, and they essentially demanded us to cease and desist until building permit was filled in. Well, my view is that only a child asks for permission. And this comes back to that child-parent thing again. And I didn't want to be a child. I wanted to be an adult and exercise myself as an adult. So I took full responsibility, and I was not going to ask for permission to do what I felt I needed to do to serve my family. So I wrote them a letter. And I also did a bunch of research into the Municipality Act to try to figure out, you know, how this is all going to work. And in the end, I noticed a few funny things on their form, where if I would have signed it, then that would give them permission to actually come onto the land. So I kind of extended that out to say that, well, if you're asking for permission, then right now you don't have it. And so I essentially challenged them on their claim that I needed to fill this out. And my approach to a lot of this stuff is, like if I was to come to you, Scott, and say, you know what, Scott, you owe me $1,000. Well, what's the first thing that you're going to say? Well, prove it.
Yeah.
Right? So the person making the claim has the burden of proof. And so I placed the burden of proof onto them, and I said, okay, fine, you know, I'll fill this out if you can prove that, you know, you have jurisdiction over me and that I have to do this under the Act. And, you know, there is a whole list of things that I placed on them And because I conditionally accepted it, and the condition was that they prove all these things,
mm-hmm.
there was no dispute. I was essentially agreeing with them, but placing the burden on them to prove it.
Right.
But their response was, well, let's send a tax assessor out and actually get somebody out there. And dealing with the state face-to-face is much more nerve-wracking. And so, you know, like I said in the film, I asked them a few questions, and one of the important ones was, are you an agent of the county? Because I, in my letter, I stated, you know, nobody has permission to come, including any agents.
Oh, okay.
And he came. So he actually violated the agreement that I had with, or the boundaries, I guess I should say. Because mm-hmm. Relationships all need boundaries, right? So when I send my letters, I establish those boundaries, and he violated that boundary.
Right.
And so I technically had, you know, trespassing charges, and he also violated a number of sections under the Municipality Act. And so when I confronted him on it, I also copied that to the Minister of Municipal Affairs for Alberta. And the minister essentially wrote me back and said, you know what, Rob, you have some really, really good points here, but I encourage you to settle this with the county. And the minister essentially washed his hands of the whole thing. He didn't want to have anything to do with it.
Right.
And I haven't heard back from the tax assessor or the county in this regard since then, and this was back in 2008.
One going to be one of my questions, because the film took a while, obviously, to get created, and, you know, Ben had editing to do, and there was time that has gone by since the filming of that, your statement, and now I was going to ask you, has anything else happened to date, to now? Nothing?
Nothing. I haven't heard from them regarding the development permits, and we've since built two airships out here. I just finished building a house for my mother-in-law. There's a garage out here, all of my outbuildings for all of our livestock and all that kind of stuff. We've continued development of our domicile, and yep. They haven't said boo.
They haven't said boo. Well, that is awesome.
How big is the property that you have up there?
We have 72 acres. Probably about 65 of it is in natural virgin northern boreal forest, and the rest is open pasture. It was an open farmer's field when we started building here.
That's great.
And how far outside of the city are you?
We're about an hour outside of Edmonton. I won't tell you which direction because I kind of like to keep where domicile is a little secret.
You gotta maintain those boundaries. Do you have to pay property tax?
Well, property tax is probably the very last thing for me to unwind right now. I don't have a birth certificate, driver's license, SIN number, Alberta health care card, passport. I don't have any of that stuff. I've unwound all of that, and I've been working on trying to figure out the property tax issue now for 5 years. And
that's a hard one, eh?
It's the toughest one. And so I've actually, this summer, I sent out claims to the Governor General and the Queen and the Lieutenant Governor of Alberta and a few other entities as well too. And none of them have rebutted my claim. So my belief, and I believe I finally figured it out, is that they won't have any claim. And so I believe they're done, and I believe the property tax issue will no longer be an issue. But I still may be tested on it. You know,
right.
It may still come down to that, but absolutely, yeah.
It's a process. All of these things is a process. You have to you have to not just learn by reading about it or learn by studying it. You have to learn by living it.
Yeah, you got to do it. And, you know, what works for me isn't going to work for you because, you know, my belief structures are different. My intent is different. And that's why I believe a lot of people struggle with this kind of stuff is they say, well, okay, well, Rob did it this way. It should work for me. And I'm going, well, no, because you got to figure out your own stuff and take your own approach and
right.
and follow your heart. This isn't an intellectual process. This is an emotional and a spiritual and an intellectual and physical process. You just can't drive 100% on the intellect and ignore the other three areas.
Do you ever get questions with emails from people that are saying, Rob, I really want to do what you do, but I can't afford to buy land and I can't afford to build build a house. And, you know, I've been working in this X industry for 15 years, and the plant I worked for now went overseas, and I've been out of work for 2 years, and it's bad enough I'm trying to live week day to day, let alone week to week. Do you get those sorts of emails where people say, I want to do it, but I don't know how I can climb out of the hole I'm in?
Yep, and I get them all the time. And this is, in my view, where the biggest trap is on how the banksters actually get us. People get confused, or they can't see the difference between the fiction and the real life, is what I call it. And a title to property is fiction, and money is fiction, and all of these corporations, like all the cards that I just ran off, like the driver's license and all that kind of stuff, those are all fiction. And we don't need those to live our lives. And, you know, I'm still trying to break that way of thinking myself too. But the reality is, you know, when we buy property, we're not buying land, dry land. What's essentially happening is we're purchasing a little piece of paper which gives our straw man a title to a lease for permission to occupy the land.
Exactly.
Well, we can do that ourselves by just making our own claim, and we don't need to buy that permission from some fictional entity called, you know, Government of Canada, or, you know, the Queen and Right of Canada, or any of that kind of stuff. And I believe that you can walk onto any crown land or any abandoned property and state your claim. And if nobody makes a counterclaim or rebuts your claim, then it should be yours to occupy until you abandon it. And we shouldn't have to see, you know, vast tracts of cities with empty houses because the banks had foreclosed on them all. And then right across the street is a great big huge tent city. That should never happen, in my opinion.
I agree.
A lot of folks out there think that when they buy a house or a piece of property, that it's actually theirs, not realizing that, you know, tomorrow they want to put a road through that particular property, it's gone. They can just come and take it and give you whatever for it.
Well, the public has this thing called eminent domain, and they can take things or confiscate things for the greater public interest. My view is that there needs to be a balance, and that balance needs to be from the needs of the many and the needs of the one. And I teach people, you know, a lot of people out there are saying, you know, we want a democracy, but the reality is a democracy is mob rule. And, yep. The, you know, the mob will, you know, steamroll over the individual without any care in the world. And what I'm trying to teach people is that there's a difference between a democracy and a republic. And,
exactly.
I'm advocating for people to govern themselves and interact with one another within a republic rather than, you know, having a group of people, you know, voting on an issue without caring for the individual who, you know, gets shafted in the end by it. So
these emails you're getting and the questions you're receiving, that was the one I was thinking of. You maybe get these heart-wrenching emails from people that have just are still caught, and you can't blame them. They're still caught up in the system. They're thinking system language. And they're saying, well, I can't do this, Rob. This is beyond my means. You answered that. It is within everybody's means, isn't it? And to say that this exact road that you've traveled may not be the road that everybody will travel.
Absolutely. And I teach that with my students in Taekwondo. My role as an instructor for my students is to, gently encourage them and push them past their own self-limiting beliefs. And I tell them outright, if you say you can't do it, you know what? You're right. If you say you can, you're right. Either way, you're right. So when people come to me and say, well, I can't do what you did, I go, you know what? You're right. Because it's up to them to let go of that and surrender to it and make the decision to either do it or not. And it's completely up to them. I can't help them in that whatsoever.
That's true. It reminds me, there was a senator that stood up, and when the people in California were all getting thrown out of their houses because the banks were foreclosing on them and the people were, getting thrown out of the houses they were moving, she said, no, stay. You should stay in your house. This is the bankers who brought this down on us. This is not your problem. It's their problem. And because of their problem, they think they can kick you out of your house. I think you should stay in your house. And it's just a matter of whether people will do that or not. Because fear comes into it. Because there's that childhood fear of authority, fear of doing the right thing, fear of following the laws. You know what I'm saying, right?
Yep. Yeah, I hear a lot of people express that fear because they have the guns and they have the tasers and they have the force. I found through my process, though, that I've never experienced any of that, which is quite odd. A lot of people find it quite odd that, I've never been arrested. I've never been detained. The police have actually never pulled me over since that, story that you saw in the film, back in November of 2007. Since then, I've never been pulled over. And, the police follow me and, they take pictures and all that kind of stuff, but, they'll follow me for 25 blocks, but they don't ever pull me over. And so people kind of wonder, well, how come that's happening for you, but other people are getting pulled over and thrown to the ground and arrested and having to go to court and all that kind of stuff? And I don't have an answer for that other than maybe I'm onto something that's different, or maybe my intent is different or my approach is different, or I don't have the answers. All I know is that
I can give you an answer as to why, because if other folks start doing the same thing you are, guess what? These guys are in big trouble.
Yeah, it could be. All I can really do is share my story, and if other people start having the same experience, then, I think we're onto something here. So
I agree completely. In that vein, I do have another question. And again, it's another informational question, but I think that's good, too, to get more information out there. Could you tell me what the Statute of Westminster was in 1931?
Well, I talked about it in the film, but it's a piece of legislation that was passed by the Parliament in Great Britain. And it was negotiated by the Prime Ministers or the representatives of a whole bunch of Commonwealth countries. And what the intent was to provide some autonomy for those Commonwealth countries, because otherwise they're all being ruled by England, and any statutes or regulations passed in England would also apply in all those Commonwealth countries. And so they negotiated that, and the king passed that in 1931. Now, what you didn't hear in the film, though, which a lot of people don't know, is that when Pierre Elliott Trudeau, I'm going to put this in quotes, repatriated our Constitution, what they actually did is they repealed the sections of the Statute of Westminster 1931 and actually hooked Canada back in. And instead of actually having repatriated our Constitution, they actually hooked us back into rule from the Crown. And so, those are the kind of games that they're playing with these statutes and regulations. But in the end, from my research, the truth is it's still all a big fiction and completely illegitimate, because the people have to establish the boundaries for their government to operate in, and the people have never done that on this land. And so the only reason that the government governs is because people are participating. And so there's a thing called tacit acceptance. If you don't say no, then you agree, whether you say nothing or whether you participate. And so at that point, everybody's participating in it, and that gives it the legitimacy that they're looking for.
Ah, I see. Now, that's very interesting. The stuff that you're doing with you've got your own solar generation of power. You're off the grid. Are you 100% off the grid, or how does that work?
Well, I'm not sure which grid you're talking about.
The energy grid. Let's talk about the energy grid. Are you 100% off the energy grid?
The only dependency I have on energy is fuels for my truck.
Okay, so that's great.
But I have solar panels for power. Our house is passively solar heated with the sun. We will burn a little bit of wood just to make it comfortable in the wintertime. But other than that, we're not connected to the power grid or gas or any of that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, and you collect your own water?
Yeah, we collect water off the roof. We store it in cisterns, and we treat our own waste here on the farm. So, you know, we don't need any waste treatment plants or any of that kind of stuff.
That's great. What about, we were mentioning, I was thinking about the community aspect of this, because different people bring different skill sets to a community. Is this something you're thinking about doing in the future? Like maybe having, and I mean in your immediate area, are you going to have other Earthships around you?
Yeah, I'd love to do that. We had an experience this summer, which was absolutely amazing. We were building a house for my mother-in-law. She decided to come out here and live on the land with us, I should say. And some dear friends of ours actually came out and helped us. And, you know, I don't have a job. My mother-in-law doesn't have a job. They didn't have a job. So we have like three families that, you know, have no jobs. But we worked on this house for 5 weeks. It went up very, very quickly. And we had food galore. Like we had, you know, it was just a banquet every day. And, I didn't have a lot to contribute, but, you know, and everybody else didn't have a lot to contribute. But when you add it all together, it all adds up. And so we experienced prosperity despite the fact that, you know, none of us had any jobs and we were just focusing on building a house. Mm-hmm. And so that's where, you know, you're kind of talking about, you know, I have some skills and they had some skills and my mother-in-law had skills and they all complemented one another. And as a result, we got a tremendous amount of stuff done, which was a fraction of the work that it would have taken if I had to do it all by myself.
Oh, yeah, it would have been huge. Now, are you thinking about expanding that, or is it just an open concept?
Well, I won't ask anybody to come and live with us on this land, mainly because historically we've found that people ended up just being dependent.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So what I've essentially said is, yeah, if you want to participate in this community, go find your own land, go build your own house, get yourself established, and then we'll work together after that.
Yeah, that's cool. It's got to be like-minded people, too. I mean, you said your mother-in-law was there and you were building a house for her. I think that's awesome, by the way.
Thank you.
And she's how's she doing with everything? Was it a big move for her?
It was a huge shift for her. It took her 2 years to make the decision, but she finally decided, you know what, I'm going to do this. And she's embraced it and she's done wonderful. She's, helped out as much as she can. And, you know, she's retiring now. Right. So,
right.
You know, this is part of, I feel my duty to look after our seniors, and I've expressed the same option for my own parents as my wife's mom, for us to look after them, and that way there's no burden on the state to do that.
Yeah. And everybody helps out how they can, how they can, in what way they can. And it's amazing. It's amazing what people can give when they're allowed to give.
And she has lots to contribute. Like, she, you know, she cooks amazing meals, and, you know, she helps out in the garden, and, you know, there's lots of things that she's helping out with that I just don't have the time to do, and but it needs to get done. So, you know, we all have a place to contribute and feel like we're actually doing something that's meaningful and of value to everybody.
What kind of stuff are you growing in the garden?
Potatoes, corn, peas, carrots, you know, raspberries, strawberries, cucumbers, you know, a typical garden.
Organic?
And I understand you have some kind of greenhouse project as well.
I'm trying to find ways to completely eliminate our dependency on grocery stores. Because I know, you know, that's all controlled by corporations, and, you know, if there's a fuel crisis or, you know, any kind of disruption in that, you know, the stores are going to be empty in 3 days. But we live up here in northern Canada, and, you know, our winters, you know, it can get down to minus 40 Celsius, which is the same as in Fahrenheit. And how do you grow food all year round or provide food in a climate like this? And so I decided that I would actually try building a greenhouse that can grow food all year round. So what we're trying to do is, I experienced something very unique when we were building our Earthship. The first winter, we didn't have any insulation, we didn't have any glass, so I just put plastic around the shell just to keep the snow off of it. And I found that the coldest that the building got was minus 4 Celsius. And that amazed me. And so I kind of thought, well, if I build a greenhouse the same way, and if I put like a greenhouse inside of a greenhouse, then the coldest that interior greenhouse is going to experience is minus 4, even though outside it could be like minus 40. And so if I just put a little stove in there and, you know, have some LED green light, grow lights or something like that, there's no reason why I can't grow food in there all year round. And if that works, then I want to help people around the cities build these things all over the place, because if I can put these kind of greenhouses in the hands of people, then, you know, we don't have to worry about any disruptions in the food system, and we can remove that dependency and actually give people the opportunity to grow their own food.
You know, more and more people are doing this. They're building greenhouses on top of apartment buildings.
In cities and green spaces and that kind of stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And even in like the row houses, they're having a community. They'll have what's called a community garden.
Yeah.
Now, the only thing that I think that education is important is having heritage seeds and making sure that you don't have genetically manipulated seeds. And this goes off into many different areas that we could talk about, which is educating people on the pharmaceutical industry and saying, you know, guys, maybe vaccinations aren't a good thing. Maybe the medical industry is not there to help you, but there to make a profit. We've covered that on previous shows. But having non-genetically manipulated seeds, I think, is very important. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, yep. And, you know, the ability not only to have those seeds, but also to learn how to harvest those seeds that you can, so that you can then use them the following year or trade with other people and increase the diversity of the plants that we have. But on the other side, too, you know, and this is something that Ben actually asked me a question on. He goes, well, what about the Monsanto of the world? You know, they have all of these patents on all of these genes and all that kind of stuff. And I told him, well, Monsanto is just a corporation. It's a fiction. Why are we giving these fictions so much power over the things that we use? And if we can see this for what it is, then the fiction disappears. And all of a sudden, where's the problem? Other than the fact that we're using these GMO seeds, and so let's get rid of them and use seeds that are actually going to benefit us.
Yeah. because of the times, as it were, the difficulty that people are having just on a, you know, living on a week-to-week basis, it's coming around now that people are, they're making gardens in their backyard. And it's a big process for a lot of people because they have to go out and learn about this stuff. They have to go and digest the information and, like, you know, how do you plant a seed? How often should I water this? These sound like simple things, but guess what? It's not.
It's a ton of work. Like, you know, I grew up on the farm, so I had an advantage. But even with that, moving out here and doing what we're doing, the amount of research and trial and error and, you know, the challenges that we had is, you know, there's a lot to it. And, you know, taking 100% responsibility and accountability for your life means that you are the gardener, you are the electrician, you are the construction worker, you know, you're the farmer, you're the milker, you know, all of these roles that you would normally hire somebody for or depend on somebody else to do, all of a sudden you're doing it all. And so rather than being an expert on any one, you kind of just do the best you can with all of them. And, you know, a friend of mine said, well, you know what you're doing, Rob? And I go, well, I kind of, what do you mean? And he goes, well, you're homesteading. It's no different than, you know, what people did 100 years ago when they came out west, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Yeah. And how's the community around you taking it? I mean, have you had interaction with the community, the people that live in the community around you?
And are absolutely.
They, seeing what you're doing and going, hey, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. The feedback I've gotten is that they really like what we're doing. There's a few people that think we're absolutely nuts, but that's okay. For the most part, most people just see what we're doing, and, you know, they came and say hi, and, you know, if we have any issues, you know, they live here or, you know, they live there, and, you know, we can come and borrow their tractor anytime we want. And but that's the kind of community it is out in the rural areas. Because, you know, if anything happens out here, all you have is to depend on your neighbor. You know, 911 emergency call to a fire department or police or ambulance could literally be days away, you know, if it's in the middle of the wintertime.
Right.
So, you know, out of necessity, people, you know, get together and they communicate and then they spend time with one another because they know that their lives depend on it.
What you just described there is the Occupy movement. People depend on each other. They get together.
Mm-hmm.
They depend on each other and they get together.
If something, you know, if you were to get sick or somebody was to get sick, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's another common question I get. My wife is a homeopath, so, you know, she treats us for the vast majority of stuff.
How you deal with medical emergencies?
Well, if I, like, broke a leg or, you know, that kind of stuff, then, you know, I would be responsible for paying the bill if I, you know, went to the public hospital to do that. But taking 100% responsibility for my life, I also realize that, you know, maybe it's a good idea for me to govern myself. And that means that, you know, just because I'm free doesn't mean I can just do whatever I want. The word govern is to self-restrict. Just like a governor on an engine keeps the engine from speeding out of control and blowing itself apart. Well, I got to do the same thing for myself. So I actually go through a risk analysis of a lot of activities. And because I'm governing myself, I'm going to say, well, I don't know, that's pretty risky. I could try that and, you know, I might get hurt or I might not. So I have to evaluate that and determine whether it's worthwhile or not to do it. And so I actually mitigate a lot of the risks or find different ways of doing things so that I can reduce the risks and reduce the probability of me experiencing a major accident, which would require me to get help from a public health facility. And it also requires...
A big emergency does occur, you are responsible for paying for the whatever that
absolutely.
May be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any surgeries or any kind of thing like that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm responsible for my retirement. I'm responsible for everything. So, you know, it takes quite a bit of work to work through that and make sure that I'm going to take care of myself.
Yeah, and how do you deal with, let's say, when, you know, you have elderly folks, you know, there will be sicknesses, there will be some, you know, circumstances, I'm sure.
I think my wife would play a significant and critical role in that with her training as a homeopath. And, you know, I believe that the food that we eat makes a huge difference. Being able to process our emotions. Like if we're, I believe that if we hold our emotions in and we don't process it properly, then the body's got to store it somewhere. And that's what makes us sick. And so if we have a healthy emotional process where we can talk about our feelings and work through them, then the body doesn't have to hold on to them and we can release them and we're much healthier as a result.
I tend to agree.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I think we're at the end of our show now. And I'd really like to thank you, Rob, for coming on the show and giving us some more information and talking about the new film, Ungrip, and your part in it. I'm sure there's going to be more that'll be happening, that you'll be processing this for a while.
A long time.
And I really wish you well on your greenhouse. I hope that goes well. And I want to get an update. When you do get that done, contact me and let me know how everything went. If you have any pictures, we can put it in the news section of the website just to say, you know, he's done it. There it is.
Well, we're going to break ground here in about a week and a half, so I'll take lots of pictures and I'll let you know. And I thank you guys for the opportunity to share my story and to talk about the film and the wonderful work that Ben did for putting it together. And I appreciate your guys' interest in the film, and you know, we'll see where it goes from here.
If you could just give your website.
Yeah, the website is www.consciousselfgovernance.ca.
That's great. Thank you. And good night, Tom. And good night, Rob.
Good night.
And we'll catch you guys.
See you next week.
Next week.
Next time.
Bye-bye. Bye.